Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman, who's on camera.
And also David. Do your last name for me again, David.
David Nieves.
Nieves. Who's recently married. Last week he got married. So we're congratulating him.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Where for your honeymoon? I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Can't go anywhere.
The pandemic. Hello. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about something non-pandemic related, and we'll probably tie the pandemic in somehow or other. We're going to be talking about licensing deals. You may ask, what's a licensing deal? Well, first, let me introduce our guest. Our guest is Stephen Extract. He's got a wonderful first name. Love the name Stephen. He's a licensing guru, and he is a brand director for Informa Markets, global licensing group, which encompasses Licensing Expo Las Vegas, Brand Licensing Europe, Licensing Expo China, Licensing Expo Japan, Licensing Leadership Summit, and Licensing Global. It's a lot of licensing. And Stephen, my first question has to be, for our viewers, can you explain what's a licensing deal? What is licensing? Give us a little, what do they need to know about that?
So, simply as possible, licensing is essentially when you are leasing another company's or another person's intellectual property to use on your products, services, or experiences. It's basically a marketing tool to sort of get you into the market quicker. If you have a generic product, and you want to sell more of it, if you put a brand name on it, you'll sell more. That's probably the simplest and easiest way to explain it. It typically involves a royalty payment to the intellectual property owner. So if I'm creating a product and I want to lease intellectual property, I would be a licensee. The intellectual property owner is what's called the licensor. Oftentimes there's a middleman involved, which would be called the agent, which is making the deal. And then the end, if it's a product, it's sold at retail, or if it's an experience, you would experience it through some sort of, some sort of experience, right? Could be a cruise, it could be a amusement park, it could be a live stage show, any number of them.
So for example, maybe I'll make a couple of examples. So for example, KitchenAid maybe really makes dishwashers, but they don't make electric carvers. But when you buy a KitchenAid electric carver, that's a licensing deal. They license the name for the electric carver, for example.
Yes, and because it has brand equity, they can sell more, right? So that's exactly right. And you see that a lot in consumer electronics, appliances. Across the board, in every area of consumer products, licensing is really it has both depth and breadth that people don't even realize. Once you sort of understand it, and you go into a retail store, say you walk into Walmart or Nordstrom, you can actually go down the aisles and start picking out what the licensed items are versus what the actual core product are, right? In fashion as well, you'll see it used quite a bit. Typically, a company like Philips Van Heusen is a shirt manufacturer, but maybe they're not so, maybe their expertise isn't in socks or in underwear or in men's suits, but they'll license the name for that. And, Philips Van Heusen owns some pretty major names like Calvin Klein, for example. So that's very big in fashion. It's very big in home goods, certainly in the entertainment industry. Disney is the leader when it comes to licensing. You go down any toy aisle, you go to what was formerly Toys R Us, now you'd have to go shop for your toys in Walmart or Target. But you go down the toy aisle and about 70% of the licensed toys there are from Disney. So, yeah.
So, Stephen, tell us, as far as the United States is concerned, versus the rest of the world, how big is the licensing business in terms of dollars?
In total, globally, the licensing business is roughly about $300 billion a year in retail.
Billion, not million, billion.
Billion in retail sales. The U.S. represents a little more than half of that, right? So the U.S. is actually the largest market in the world for consumer products licensing. However, China is growing very quickly.
Who else?
UK is very large. Even though it's a smaller population, they're very brand-centric. Germany and Japan. So your largest markets are US, UK, Germany, Japan, China, and China is quickly going to eclipse all of that, right? China will be the largest market in about 2 to 3 years.
And does it mean as much to like wait, I know that the baby boomers were very brand oriented, but I've read that millennials are not brand oriented. So does that mean licensing is going to be less prevalent as things move forward, or not necessarily, or doesn't really affect?
So the interesting thing about millennials and Gen Z is they're more motivated by experiences than by brands. And certainly when you see how these direct consumer brands have come up through online, right, through e-commerce, but they are brand centric. There was a company that was financed by SoftBank to the tune of about $300 million that was called Brandless. And they just went out of business in February because their concept was, oh, millennials don't care about brands. Let's create something called Brandless and just sell this Brandless. And it didn't work because millennials do, you know, a brand is an experience, right? And if a millennial wants an experience, they also want that brand. It's just they're not as locked in to their parents' brands. And so I like to look at it as there are heritage brands that we grew up with, that we boomers grew up with. And then there are the direct-to-consumer brands, which are new, which millennials and Gen Z are willing to try, right? Because they represent, I mean, probably one of the best brands to talk about here would be Patagonia. Patagonia is a brand that actually gives back, right? They give back, they put money back into the environment. They're sustainable. They're all about where they manufacture their product, and that's something that both millennials and Gen Z look for in a product. They want something that actually is cause related and does well, and they're willing to pay more for that. So it's not so much that millennials aren't focused on brands; they're just focused on the good that brands can do.
But in the case of Patagonia, for example, so they right now, they're just their brand. You buy their product, they give money to whatever. But if they were to license their name to some other company that makes, makes dinnerware, not necessarily then the same thing will happen. So sure, you'll be buying that dinnerware, it'll be Patagonia dinnerware, but none of that will be going to charity. So they'll have licensed their name, but not necessarily their spirit and soul into the dinnerware side of the business.
That's right. And that's why Patagonia doesn't really do any licensing.
Right.
Because it's very controlled. They want to control their distribution. They want to control their messaging. They want to control their brand, and they want to control the product. So, in that case, yes. But, it's interesting during this pandemic, what we're finding is that all age groups, but certainly millennials and Gen Z are going towards the familiar. And so what we're seeing is brands like Kraft Heinz, right? Which was actually starting to decline because millennials were much more health conscious and didn't want to eat the processed foods that, you know, Kraft American cheese, right? We're actually seeing a return to comfort and to those brands that were their parents' brands, because in this type of pandemic, people want, they want comfort, and also nostalgia appeals to them. So what we're probably gonna see coming out of this is an increase in nostalgia licensing. nostalgia brands, and as well as entertainment as well. So people who have children will be much more attracted to the properties they grew up with, the entertainment properties they grew up with, because it's a comforting, it makes people feel comfortable, right? And brands make people feel comfortable. That's the whole point of branding, is you have an emotional connection to a brand, right? And that's how licensing works, is through that emotional connection.
So Stephen, is there a change now during this pandemic in terms of, you know, which licenses are big or sales have gone up and down? How has it impacted the licensing business?
So certain, so, you know, first of all, you know, retail has been, non-essential retail has basically been shut down, right? So the most, I would say the most impacted is the fashion and apparel business is pretty much, you know, it's dead on arrival, right? Nobody's buying fashion and apparel right now. People might be ordering sweats online, but that's about it. The area, the one area that's doing incredibly well off the charts for licensing is face masks. And it's funny because I've been going to Asia for about 20 years for business. And in Asia, you know, wearing face masks is just de rigueur. It's what people do. If they have a cold, they wear a face mask because they want to protect other people from catching their germs. And, but it would never, you would never see that in the West until now, right? But I often thought, and I often joked with my colleagues when we'd come back from Asia, gee, we should get the license for some face masks, right? We should do like Kiss or Rolling Stones, The Big Tongue, or any kind of branded, that would be great if face masks ever came in here. But knowing America, knowing how we are, you know, this whole anti, like you can't cover your face and you go to the airport, you have to have your face exposed, show your ID. It never occurred to us that this would happen, right? But now licensed face masks are the thing. Everybody wants their favorite brand, or their favorite character, or their favorite band on a face mask. So they're just blowing up. They're just taking off like crazy. Other categories that are doing well, video games are gonna do extremely well. The video game is up about 75%. Esports, which is competitive video gaming, which is the only sport that actually could be played during this pandemic. Those are actually, believe it or not, those are professional teams and professional leagues in esports. And so they sell jerseys and all kinds of, the same kind of products that you'd see a professional sports team. Those are doing very well. So there are categories that, the thing about licensing is, there's always categories that do well, despite whatever the economy is doing. There's always categories that will do well, and there's categories that do well. But if you put a bet on licensing, then some categories are for sure going to do well. Nesting and home goods will do extremely well. Everyone's staying home now, right? So people want, and everything into your house through Zoom. People want their house to look good, so they're looking to get artwork, they're looking to get home furnishings. So, and that's, licensing exists in all of those areas.
So Stephen, one thing I could never understand, you mentioned home furnishings. Somebody would show me a material, it could have been just geometric design, and they say, oh, we're licensing this, and I go, what, how does that work?
Well, it's an artist has come up with that design, and they've trademarked it, and then it's sold as a trademark, and therefore that artist is going to get a royalty payment on that fabric. But you know, if you see in home furnishings today, in the home furnishings business, it's become a very big celebrity business. You know, you've got the Scott brothers, who are also known as the Property Brothers.
Right.
They've got an entire line of home furnishings. You've got someone like Kathy Ireland, who, you know, was the famous swimsuit model from the early 80s. She's got a multi-billion dollar company that's all licensing. It's all licensing. And she does office furniture. She does home furniture. I mean, certainly you look at Martha Stewart, you know, still, believe it or not, Martha Stewart's still going, not as strong as she once was in licensing, but, you know, the Martha Stewart brand is still out there. and, you know, in every category of home furnishing you can think of. So
what is the appeal about Kathy Ireland that it would make her a multi-million dollar business? It's not her. What is it?
It is actually so interesting. Kathy Ireland actually runs her company. She's a very smart businesswoman. The appeal was, somehow the way she got into licensing 25, 30 years ago was a sock manufacturer came to her and said, "We want to put your name on socks." And she's like, "What? Socks? Why?" And they're like, "We just think they'll sell with your name on it." "Okay, fine." And they did. And so her business started to expand. She brought in the designer who worked with Elizabeth Taylor to come up with the Elizabeth Taylor Diamonds perfume, which was, by the way, a top selling perfume. I don't know if you recall that, but was probably one of the highest selling perfumes ever was the Elizabeth Taylor Diamonds perfume, right?
Diamonds, right.
Right, and pure license. And Elizabeth Taylor had nothing to do with that. But Kathy Ireland actually developed her business and they, what she does, what Kathy does, Kathy gives back, gives money to charity. She's very charitable. She's very, she's always looking to give back. And that's one of the areas that's really helped her in her licensing, is that her fan base, which are, you know, women of a certain age, understand that and they really buy into it. So.
Before we go, I'm sure Steve has a bunch of more questions, but what were some of the biggest success stories in licensing? You mentioned Disney, but who is somebody else that we would recognize?
There's so many.
Pokemon.
Pokemon is a huge license, and it goes from strength to strength. So Pokemon is about, it's been in the U.S. market for 20 years. It was in Japan it's been around about 25 years. But they have gone from strength to strength, and they've kept that brand an evergreen property. It's not a flash in the pan like a lot of these kids' properties are. A lot of these kids' properties come and go, and, you know, sometimes they have a comeback after 10, 15, 20 years. Pokemon has consistently performed really well. It's really kind of a standout property, multi-billion dollar property, and partly is because the Pokemon company keeps it, they keep inventing new ways to sort of keep their fans really
engaged, right?
Engaged, yeah.
And any others that you could mention that our audience would say, "Oh yeah, I didn't realize that they're that big."
So you know, you could look at, well, let's take Coca-Cola for example. Coca-Cola, which is very old heritage brand, it's about 130 years old. But they've done an enormous job of in the fashion apparel licensing. And what I like to use Coca-Cola as an example, because Coca-Cola doesn't look at licensing as a way to drive revenue. They look at licensing as a way to get advertising for their core product. Now, the fact that it brings in, that they sell about $1 billion a year in licensed consumer products, that's nice, but basically they're making their money off their core product, which is sweet fizzy drinks, right? But when you see someone walking around with a $130 Coca-Cola fashion t-shirt, you know, that person is probably a trendsetter, and it's a walking billboard for Coca-Cola, right? And they're getting paid for it. I mean, what's better than that? And this is something that companies tend to forget. They tend to think that licensing is just a way to make revenue. But if you look at it as a marketing tool for your brand, that when your brand is on a product or service or experience and people are using it and they're happy about it, then you're actually getting free advertising and you're getting paid for it. So I don't see what could be better than that.
Steve, I didn't let you speak. Go ahead.
A couple of things. I was like, I'm always amazed when a company that's gone, it gets licensed, like Polaroid and Westinghouse, other names that came and went, they come back because their name is still so known by a certain segment of the population, which I think is kind of amazing. You don't have to be in business. I think you mentioned Toys R Us. They're actually back as a licensed name for certain books.
And the airline Pan Am, which never came back, but someone bought the brand, and they're doing licensed, they're doing suitcases, they're doing retro products, and they're doing extremely well, extremely well.
And speaking of brands, I don't think I can go any further without talking about our sponsor who powers Lying on the Beach on Camera, and that is the Handle Stick. I have to stand here to show it. Lois has one on her phone right now. Handle, which is this little device. There you go. You can attach it directly to the phone or directly to the case. And when you pull it back, you can actually hold your phone that way, which makes it really easy to use. But it's also a kickstand, as Lois is demonstrating right now. So you can use the phone both horizontally or vertically. And again, it's just an easy way to hold the phone as well. Lois, you can show us holding the phone as well. Hold it like that. There we go. And it comes in 40 different colors and shades, or at least 40, maybe a lot more actually. These two are, I don't know if they'll show well on my virtual screen, but there in front of me they do. And if you want more information on the Handle Stick, you can go to www.handlenewyork.com. How do you spell New York? And handlenewyork.com. And the starting price on this product is incredibly just. David, how much is it?
$10.
That's right, just $10. So please check out Handle. And one day people will be licensing the Handle name. I'm absolutely sure of it. So I think we're set. Lois, any other questions for our guests?
I have another question for Stephen. What do you think is going to happen with the pandemic? How will that impact the business? I don't know if I asked you that already, but I don't remember the answer.
It already has impacted the business. So we've already seen two major licensees go into Chapter 11. There'll be a lot more. Typically, a lot of licensees are small businesses. So if you think about like the people who manufacture T-shirts or manufacture smaller products and appliances, those tend to be smaller businesses. There are large businesses that can get the loans and will be able to sustain themselves. But we're going to see a big shakeout in the business. And you're also seeing a lot of retailers falling by the wayside. JCPenney, Neiman Marcus. I mean, the list goes on and on. The whole ecosystem of brick and mortar retail is falling apart. And this is just speeding it up. So what we're also going to see is that a lot of these companies, both licensed stores and licensees, are going to have to develop online stores. And there are companies that are helping them do that. Some, obviously, Disney already has its own online store. You know, Coca-Cola has its own online store. Discovery Communications has its own online store. But it's something that is going to be necessary for these companies to do business. They're going to have to bring their licensees in under their umbrella and help them come to market. It's just a reality. So we'll see a lot of pain before we see, before we get out of this, but it's just the way the business operates.
So my last question is, how do we take Steve TV, which is owned by Steve Greenberg and he's known throughout the country, how does somebody start a licensing business? And we only have 8 minutes left, so.
Well, you would take Steve TV to probably the largest marketplace for selling global TV. You would take it to MIPCOM or to NAPBE, or you'd find a company to present Steve TV and have them sell it to broadcasters and around the globe looking for that kind of content.
So there are companies that probably nobody ever heard of that just through licensing became a global brand.
Companies that no one ever heard of.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like Steve TV.
Hey.
Is that possible? Is it possible for me to take DigiDame and like just market it and somebody else picks it up and makes a big name out of it?
So typically, in order to do licensing, you need to have a fan base, right? And I get these calls all the time from people who have a great idea, and you know they're very invested in that idea and they want to license it. And I'm like, well, how many fans do you have? How many people are coming to your website to look at your artwork or your animation? Not that many. Well, you need a certain certain core group of fans in order to be able to license, right? License into products, at least, and experiences. But, you know, you never know when the next, where the next big hit's coming from, right?
It sounds like I'm going to have to keep working for a living. Darn it. Oh, well, I appreciate that. With a little bit of free advice there is always appreciated. I think we're set then, correct?
Correct. Thank okay. you, Stephen. Thank you, David.
We appreciate it, everybody. Once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess
and David.
Stephen Extract.
And Stephen Extract and David.
David Nieves.
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 And we have been flying on the beach on camera. So long, everybody. Bye.